This Morning, America's First News starts right after this. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This Morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
The transition begins. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koshenka on this Tuesday, November 24. Thanks for being with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
President Trump has signaled for the General Services Administration to cooperate with President-elect Joe Biden's move to the White House.
Former Federal Reserve Chairwoman Janet Yellen is expected to be nominated as Treasury Secretary, plus here are a couple of other names for key positions.
The numbers may be down from last year, but Americans are still flying this holiday week. Hear the latest passenger screening count from airports.
And trends to watch as you begin to check items on your holiday shopping list.
Well, I think, you know, we all know that holiday shopping is going to be a little different. I think people are still pretty hesitant to go out to stores, and some of the trend lines that we've been seeing over the past few years in terms of shopping are going to be amped up even higher. I mean, we're going to see a lot more online shopping, more so than ever before.
Janelle Nanos at the Boston Globe on holiday shopping trends. President Trump says his administration will cooperate with President-elect Joe Biden's transition to the White House. The General Services Administration, which had been formally holding up the transition, citing uncertainty in the results, said yesterday it would provide Mr. Biden federal resources meant to assist in a smooth transfer. Mr. Trump, meanwhile, pledges to continue his legal efforts to overturn the election result. No evidence of significant voter fraud has been produced so far. Separately, Michigan yesterday certified its results. Also, Georgia today begins recounting the roughly 5 million votes cast in the presidential race after the Trump campaign requested a machine count. Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger.
We told the campaign if they find instances of voter fraud, we will check it out. We have not seen widespread systemic voter fraud that would overturn the results of the people.
He was on Fox Business. Also, a group of Pennsylvania Republicans is now trying to block certification of those election results, which had Mr. Biden winning there by more than 80,000 votes. More names floated for the incoming Biden administration. For one, President-elect Joe Biden plans to nominate economist and former Federal Reserve Chairwoman Janet Yellen as Treasury Secretary. More now from this morning's Mike Gavin.
Ms. Yellen, who's 74, was the first woman to lead the Fed. If confirmed by the Senate, she would become the first person to have headed the Treasury, the Central Bank, and the White House Council of Economic Advisors. Separately, Mr. Biden's transition team said he would nominate Alejandro Mayorkas to lead the Department of Homeland Security and Avril Haines as Director of National Intelligence. Both are former Obama administration aides. John Kerry, Secretary of State under President Obama, will serve as Special Presidential Envoy for Climate Change. Gordon.
Thanks, Mike. A formal announcement of Ms. Yellen's selection isn't expected to occur until after Thanksgiving. A Biden transition official yesterday told the Wall Street Journal that his office would announce the first few members of his economic team early next week. The Transportation Security Administration says more than a million passengers were screened on Sunday, the highest number since March, though the numbers are down nearly 60% from the same time last year. Dr. Anthony Fauci on PBS.
They should know that they're putting themselves and their family members at risk.
Also of note, U.S. airline executives last week said they had seen a rise in cancellations and slower bookings lately. Meanwhile, Reuters says the 7-day rolling average number of U.S. COVID-19 deaths climbed for a 12th straight day. Minnesota Governor Tim Walz.
You've seen records set in terms of cases, hospitalizations, ICUs, and then unfortunately deaths.
Deaths are also on the rise, but they are lower than in the first months of the pandemic as doctors understand now better how to treat the disease. One other note, to try to contain the spread on one day, Pennsylvania will stop alcohol sales at bars and restaurants at 5 p.m. tomorrow, one of the busiest nights of the year for the service industry. Service will resume on Thanksgiving. It is 10 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Dell Technologies just announced their Black Friday sale, releasing new doorbusters every weekday, plus up to 50% off cutting-edge tech for your business. There's no better time to upgrade your small business with the latest laptops and desktops with Intel Core processors. Plus, there's free shipping on everything. Give Dell Technologies advisors a call. They'll identify the right tech solution for your business. Call 877-ASK-DELL or go to dell.com/sbblackfriday.
When it comes to mobility, Michigan is making what the rest of the world hasn't even thought of yet. Our state is home to two world-class autonomous vehicle testing sites, and we're first in the U.S. for mobility-related patents. With over 500 miles of roadway equipped for connected vehicle testing, it's no wonder that everyone is moving to where it all started. So if you're ready to move into the future with your mobility business, see how we can help at planetm.com/pure-opportunity.
Thanks for joining us. Encouraged by promising results from major clinical trials of two coronavirus vaccines, public health officials are preparing for the daunting task of delivering those shots to tens of millions of Americans. By the way, it is now three promising coronavirus vaccines. Lena Sun, health reporter at The Washington Post, says, among other things, the vaccines need to be distributed across 50 states plus U.S. territories that have different demographics and shifting needs. Lena, so much to work out.
It's really complicated, and I think people need to understand that it is going to be rolled out in phases, and each phase is likely to have a lot of hiccups, but people need to just keep that in mind, and it is really complicated, and it is going to take a while, but I think it's going to get done.
All right, so you gave examples from a couple of different states in terms of what they're doing. What'd you find there?
Well, I think you just have to remember that the vaccines that we're dealing with, it's complicated because they have to be stored at different temperatures. They have different minimum orders, and each of them requires two doses, but at different intervals. So you just think about the, permutations there for a lot of things. So some states have bought these ultra-cold freezers. The Pfizer vaccine has to be kept at minus 70 degrees Celsius, which is about deep winter in Antarctica. Yeah. The other vaccine doesn't have to be kept as cold. And then they have to get them to people. But the minimum order for the Pfizer vaccine is 975 doses. So that means you are going to be likely to get it if you work at a large hospital that has those freezers and has the capability to maybe vaccinate more than 900 people at one time. But in the smaller rural areas, the hospitals don't have those freezers. They may only have 20 docs and 20 nurses. I mean, the first priority group is likely to go to healthcare workers. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be hard to round up enough people. And the Pfizer vaccine, for example, has a very complicated protocol. It needs to stay frozen, and then once you open the container, you can only open it twice. It has to be recharged with dry ice. There are a lot of things that go into handling it, and so that limits how quickly they can get it to people, and we're not going to have that many doses initially.
So what happens if you can't meet that minimum order of, or minimum of 975 doses? If you're a small hospital, say?
Well, I think a lot of states are trying to figure out a way to, let's say you have a big hospital system and the central hub is in a big city, but there's satellite hospitals or other clinics that are part of your system, then maybe you organize a clinic at that campus and people drive to you to get the shots, from other places.
Yeah.
But when it gets rolled out to a much broader group of Americans, pharmacies will be involved. There will be mass vaccination clinics also. And so in Maine, for example, they're thinking, what's the best way to vaccinate people in the dead of winter when it's freezing outside, right? You want people to be outside. So they're thinking about maybe using car washes, because car washes have an in and an out, and the vaccinator can stand inside where it's heated and just wear their protective stuff, not like all the parkas and gloves and stuff, and you can drive through, roll down your window, get the shot, drive out.
We're speaking with Lena Sun, health reporter on the national staff of The Washington Post. She's got a good story entitled, Now Comes the Hardest Part, Getting a Coronavirus Vaccine from Loading Dock to Upper Arm. All right, so you referenced these frontline healthcare workers in line to get the vaccine, also essential workers, which would include who? Because you said they come from a lot of the minority communities, right?
Well, essential workers, so here's how it works. The federal government is going to set a list of recommendations for who should get the vaccines first. Because when they get finally authorized by the Food and Drug Administration, there's not going to be enough for everybody. So who should be the priority to get it first? A lot of people think that it will be healthcare workers on the front line. So these are not just doctors and nurses, but custodial folks, people who are in direct contact with patients. And then the other essential workers, you know, every state is going to have different essential workers, right? The snowplow driver in Minnesota will be essential, but maybe the mosquito catcher in Florida will be essential. So the federal government will sort of broadly define who are essential workers. And then each state will make the final decisions like, okay, we have this many healthcare workers, we have this many other workers, we're going to decide these people will come first. And the idea is they want the federal government, the federal committee that is going to be making these recommendations wants to keep equity in mind, and they're going to define essential workers in such a way that it will include communities of color where a lot of people have been harder hit, they cannot work remotely, they don't have public transportation, and they live in crowded housing, so it's much more likely that, you know, they would pass the virus on to family.
Thanks, Lena. That is Lena Sun, health reporter at The Washington Post. 20 minutes now after the hour on This Morning. Here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
Emily Murphy, director of the General Services Administration, informed President-elect Biden late Monday she was ready to begin the formal transition process, the first move by the Trump administration acknowledging Biden's victory. Murphy, a Trump appointee, had come under intense criticism by many for refusing to cooperate with the incoming administration weeks after it became apparent that Biden was the winner of the presidential election. The move will allow Biden and his team to coordinate their pandemic response with current administration officials and be briefed on prospective vaccine efforts.
Number two.
The Michigan Board of State Canvassers has certified President-elect Biden's victory in the state in its 16 electoral votes in a 3-0 vote yesterday afternoon with one abstention. Michigan is the first of several battleground states that are scheduled this week to certify Biden's electoral victories.
Number three.
In Georgia, a recount is underway. Gabriel Sterling is the state's voting system implementation manager.
Crazy things happen, but the likelihood is very low. We don't expect it to change, but you never know for certain.
Janet Yellen is in line for another top economic policy job just in time to confront yet another crisis. Yellen, President-elect Biden's apparent choice for Treasury Secretary, served on the Federal Reserve's policymaking committee during the 2008-2009 financial crisis that nearly toppled the banking system. She became Fed chair in 2014 when the economy was still recovering from the devastating recession. In the late 90s, Yellen was President Bill Clinton's top economic advisor during the Asian financial crisis. Separately, former Secretary of State John Kerry will act as climate envoy. David Dinkins, who broke barriers as New York City's black mayor, has died at the age of 93. His death came less than 2 months after his wife, Joyce, died. Jeopardy! Will resume production next Monday, just weeks after the show's beloved host Alex Trebek died after a battle with pancreatic cancer. Former contestant Ken Jennings, who is widely regarded as the best Jeopardy! Player of all time, will serve as the first of a series of interim hosts before the show announces Trebek's permanent replacement. ViacomCBS says additional hosts will be announced in the coming weeks.
All right, thank you, Jen. 22 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Black Friday's on the way, as you know, and let's be honest, things have gotten a little crazy. If you're looking for great clothes as gifts or for yourself, you can't beat CutsClothing.com. Cuts makes the best t-shirts, polos, and hoodies you can find, combining classic looks with modern fabrics. And when they say modern, we're talking up-to-the-minute technology. The new Pika Pro fabric is downright buttery soft. You gotta wear it to believe it. It's an amazing combination of fit, fabric, and function. Perfect for work, a night out, or anything in between. Skip the gimmicks. Pick up the quality, minimalist clothes that your favorite athletes, entrepreneurs, and even podcast hosts are upgrading to. For example, I wear a Cuts t-shirt under an open flannel shirt with a sports jacket and just as a t-shirt. Shop CutsClothing.com between November 11 and December 1st to save 30% site-wide. That's 30% off everything with no code required. CutsClothing.com. Between November 11 and December 1. Cuts Clothing, the only t-shirt worth wearing. CutsClothing.com. Thanks for being with us. The holidays are going to be different this year, and the traditional shopping season, so pivotal to retailers, is going to be bizarre. The tree lighting ceremonies in retail shopping districts, they'll probably be on Zoom. Crowding into stores for Black Friday sales? Not a great idea. Still, people are creatures of habit, and reporter Janelle Nanos at the Boston Globe says retailers are hoping to add a dash of holiday magic into the dark winter ahead. Janelle, what are you hearing?
There's people thinking that they're actually going to spend a little bit less this holiday season, and that's because, in part, because they're going to travel less, and we're going to spend more time at home.
Right. I was surprised, too. I mean, I knew it was coming, but the spike in sales done on smartphones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those numbers have really been ticking up now for a while, and I think that, you know, they said that this year they're expecting the number of sales to have grown about 2 years worth of in terms of overall sales of online purchases, and that's both, you know, and that's because smartphones are becoming more of a tool that we're using on a daily basis anyway. You know, we've gotten far more comfortable with making purchases on our phone, and now we're also using our phones to navigate with checkout. We're using them to scan orders when we're doing that buy online and pick up in store. And so the idea of clicking through your phone, making that purchase, we're just that much more familiar with it.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be a really big deal.
I know there are obviously tens of millions of Americans looking for work or more work, but I thought to a certain extent the amount we spend on the holidays might tick up simply because we're not doing things like, say, traveling for the holidays, as you pointed out in your story. I thought that might bump up, you know, what we spend on gifts.
Yeah, I think there is some thought that, you know, I think we're going to reallocate some of that money. You know, like, we're not going to be buying plane tickets or things of that nature. Mm-hmm. So maybe we will spend a little bit more on home. I think there, one of the things that that they have been finding when they do surveys is that it's actually the spend goes down a little bit on the sort of self-gift idea or the non-holiday. It's kind of like the non-holiday purchases. So, you know, they might not spend as much on things that you would kind of grab while you're at the store for yourself. You know, like, oh, I'm just going to pick up a sweater while I'm at it. I think there's a little bit of guilt there about doing that sort of thing.
Hmm.
But, yeah, I think they're expecting that people who would normally travel for the holidays might actually spend more on decor or things like that. And so it might be offset a little bit.
We're speaking with Janelle Nanos, business reporter at the Boston Globe. Her piece is called Holiday Shopping is different this year. Trends to watch as you check off your gift list. You said, too, Black Friday is officially dead. Explain that.
Well, we've been sort of looking at that, at the Black Friday as being a holiday that was sort of a commercial one, and people were sort of chipping away at it, you know, complaining about how it was kind of encroaching upon Thanksgiving now for a while. And frankly, you know, it's been slowly spreading out throughout the month of, you know, November, December in terms of deals. I think now a lot of retailers, because of the concerns about crowds, really kind of wanted to make sure that they could bring in people throughout the months of, you know, November, December, even October. We were starting to see some Black Friday ads. So, you know, we're starting to see those sales now. They're already out there. People are already getting the deals. You know, the notion of getting a great deal on one day, I think, is just over at this point.
Thanks, Janelle. Janelle Nanos, reporter at the Boston Globe. By the way, there are more ways than ever to connect to America's First News. You can download the This Morning with Gordon Deal app from the Apple or Google app stores. You can also tell Alexa, Google, or Siri to play This Morning with Gordon Deal. No matter what your business does, there's no question that if you didn't have a digital presence before, you better have one now. But if the things you need to do it, graphic design, copywriting, web programming, film editing, and more, aren't what your business does, that's a problem. But there is a solution, and it's the online marketplace, Fiverr. Fiverr's global network of on-demand freelance talent is ready to help. Whether you're launching your first business, your current business is pivoting, or you're in need of extra support, or you're trying to digitally optimize your business, you can find it instantly with Fiverr. Customize your search by service, deadline, price, and more. And the pricing at Fiverr is project-based, not hourly. So there's no negotiating, no guesswork, and there's 24/7 customer service. Check out Fiverr.com and receive 10% off your first order by using my code Gordon. Find all the digital services you need in one place at Fiverr.com, code Gordon. Again, that's Fiverr.com and the code Gordon.
Advancing the conversation, identifying trends, and informing the world. This is America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Tuesday, November 24. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka, some of our top stories and headlines. The Biden transition is set to officially begin. Former Fed Chair Janet Yellen to be nominated for Treasury Secretary. Trump administration weighing new measures against China. COVID hospitalizations set a record for the 13th day in a row. Maryland State Police will be watching for large gatherings this week. President Trump today pardons a turkey from Iowa. Rams over the Buccaneers in Monday Night Football. Grammy nominations out today. And the man who left a whopping tip on a $7 beer. That story in about 20 minutes. This portion of the program is brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. I recently spoke with Josh Hunt, their Executive Vice President and Chief Business Development Officer. You can check out the interview at thismorningwithgordondeal.com and click on the MEDC microphone. As Joe Biden administration could mean both big changes and more certainty for the U.S. auto industry after turbulent but mostly lucrative years under President Trump. Here to explain how is Ben Foldy, automotive reporter at the Wall Street Journal from Detroit. Ben, what's up here?
Yeah, so I mean, I think the big shift for Biden from Trump is going to be Biden has a really pronounced kind of focus on electric vehicles. Mr. Trump ended up late in the debate stage saying that he supported electric vehicles, but his administration has been pretty lukewarm on the technology and actually kind of tried to revoke some of the tax credits that already exist for electric vehicles. And Biden, meanwhile, is kind of pinning a lot of his hopes for the future of the industry, the future of his climate change kind of plans, and other aspects of his platform all on electric vehicles.
What about emissions regulations?
Yeah, so that's definitely been an issue that kind of bedeviled the auto industry over the last 4 years. The auto industry came in when Mr. Trump took office, the auto industry basically asked him to roll back a set of standards that was going into effect to cover the next few years of models that they saw as kind of unduly ambitious in their efforts to cut down on greenhouse gas emissions. That kicked off a process where Trump did try to roll those back, but ended up trying to roll them back too far in the eyes of a lot of the industry, and definitely in the eyes of a state like California, which can also set its own standards that are more strict than the federal standards.
Mm-hmm.
So that kicked off a big kind of legal question over whether or not, what the standards would be, how they would settle them, and whether or not there would be kind of one set of standards for the country and another set of standards for California and about a dozen other states that follow them and constitute about 40% of the market. Right now, almost every aspect of that process is in court, which is not really what business executives like to hear. It's not the clearest outcome. So there's some thinking that Biden will move to, drop the federal side of some of that legislation, kind of bringing California back into more alignment with the federal government. But it's a little unclear on kind of how that will all resolve. But there's definitely more hope for a resolution between California and the federal government under Biden than there was under Trump.
What about trade issues, Ben?
Yeah, that's probably where there's going to be the least divergence on the macro level. Barring one exception, Biden, by all appearances, is going to keep up pressure on China, which is definitely meaningful for the auto industry. China is the world's largest auto market, and for finished cars, and also, as you might imagine, like a lot of other manufacturing industries, a lot of kind of further down in the supply chain, China is important for that too. But where you are going to see a shift likely is. Mr. Trump was really, he's a tariff man. He said so in his own words. And so when he was negotiating with Canada and Mexico over North American free trade, when he was negotiating with the EU, when he was negotiating with Japan, one of his favorite tactics was to threaten tariffs, often on the auto industry. And so that kind of had a lot of automakers kind of tearing their hair out over the last 4 years. And it seems pretty unlikely because Biden has kind of said that he wants to work with allies to keep up pressure on China, that, tariffs against kind of traditional allies like Japan and the EU, which obviously import a lot of cars to the U.S.,
yeah.
would be, you know, even threatened, much less actually on the table.
We're speaking with Ben Foldy, automotive reporter at the Wall Street Journal. His piece is called "In Biden, Detroit Gets a So-Called Car Guy with Electric Vehicles on His Mind." You said, too, there was a pretty lucrative period under the Trump administration for the automotive industry.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. And that wasn't just under Trump. I mean, the auto industry had a big recovery under Obama leading into Trump. I think 2016, so the year leading into Trump's campaign or election, was actually, I think, the highest point of sales in the U.S. But so the companies, by and large, have continued to do pretty well under Trump in terms of quarterly profits and the like. Obviously, COVID kind of screwed that up in the second quarter this year. But even if you look at the last quarter, I mean, profits are up pretty significantly, and most auto companies had a pretty good quarter last quarter.
Thanks, Ben. Ben Foldy, automotive reporter at the Wall Street Journal in Detroit. Meanwhile, General Motors says it will no longer back the Trump administration in its legal battle to deny California's authority to set its own fuel efficiency regulations, saying GM's goals for green cars are aligned with the state and the incoming Biden administration. It's 20 minutes in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Tuesday. It is time now for the mic drop with This Morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, we know football coaches will do anything to motivate their teams. And when you're coaching a team that had playoff aspirations but is riding a four-game losing streak, you'll really pull out all the stops. For example, Dallas Cowboys coach Mike McCarthy, who wanted to illustrate how the team could smash its losing streak by taking a sledgehammer to a bunch of watermelons, Gallagher style. McCarthy staged the stunt at the team's meeting on Saturday night in Minneapolis. He says he had to pack the sledgehammer and a case of watermelons on the team's charter flight, since he was told it would be hard to find big watermelons in Minnesota this time of year. Despite the logistical hurdles, he said the melon smash went over and was well received, and maybe it worked, as the team wound up edging the Vikings by a score of 31-28.
What do you do next week?
Right.
You can't go back to the watermelons.
Yeah.
That's old now.
Yeah. That is always the challenge for football coaches, right, is how do you come up with new ways to motivate your team every week? And, you know, when you start smashing things, there's not a much further you can go.
So let me ask you this. You brought up an interesting point right there.
Yeah.
Is it the coach's job to motivate the team each week? Or is it the player's job to motivate themselves each week? I think it was a former coach or athlete from the soccer world comment on that. He's like, it's not the manager's job, you know, the coach's job to do that. If you can't get motivated as a professional athlete, you shouldn't be out there.
I mean, it seems like, football coaches, you know, maybe because it's the short season and each game means so much, it seems like they go out of their way more than any other coaches do to try and motivate players.
It's a more emotional sport.
Yes.
Too.
Yes, that is true.
I did that one time with my 10-year-olds. Playing soccer.
Okay.
It was our first ever state cup game.
Right.
You know, you were eligible at the age of 10 to do it. So I'm treating it, of course, like it's the greatest game in the world ever played, even
World
though they're
cup
10,
style.
Right?
Yeah, sure.
So I was joking with them. I said, we gotta put our town on the map. Here's how we're gonna do it. And I drew a map of the state of New Jersey and where we are. And at the very end, like, I stabbed my pen, like, right through the middle of the paper onto the ground. The kids went crazy. Their parents went crazy. And, we went on to win. So there you go.
And then you were not invited back for next
that's
year.
Right. That's right.
And, you know, every often we do a story, and then we get some more information which may or may not warrant a revisit. In this case, the New York Post headline literally begs for a follow-up. Long lines at Colorado In-N-Out spark wild pantless fight. You remember we told you yesterday about the crazy long lines in Aurora, Colorado on Friday for the opening of the state's first In-N-Out Burger, with police estimating the drive-thru wait upwards of 14 hours at one point. What we didn't know at the time was that things got a little heated in line at one point. Video started circulating on Twitter showing three men brawling while in line for the burgers, apparently set off by someone trying to cut in line without permission. Now, the Post headline's a little misleading, since all three of the men began the confrontation with pants, but one of them loses his sweatpants after falling to the ground. The brawl appears to be broken up pretty quickly after someone identified by the user as In-N-Out Security intervenes. This is what it's come to. We need In-N-Out Security now to patrol the lines for potential line cutters.
And to make sure the brawlers have pants on.
Right.
If you're like a referee of an MMA fight, whoa, fighters, got your mouth guard? Yes. Gloves? Yes. Pants? Let's make sure we get our pants on.
Sorry, that's out of bounds, sir.
Dell Technologies just announced their Black Friday sale, releasing new doorbusters every weekday, plus up to 50% off cutting-edge tech for your business. There's no better time to upgrade your small business with the latest laptops and desktops with Intel Core processors. Plus, there's free shipping on everything. Give Dell Technologies advisors a call. They'll identify the right tech solution for your business. Call 877-ASK-DELL or go to dell.com/sbblackfriday.
When it comes to mobility, Michigan is making what the rest of the world hasn't even thought of yet. Our state is home to two world-class autonomous vehicle testing sites, and we're first in the U.S. for mobility-related patents. With over 500 miles of roadway equipped for connected vehicle testing, it's no wonder that everyone is moving to where it all started. So if you're ready to move into the future with your mobility business, visit planetm.com/pure-opportunity.
Thanks for being with us. About 6 in 10 Americans say their stress levels would drop if they could have all the ingredients for a Thanksgiving dinner delivered right to their door. Good news, you can. CNBC Make It took a look at Walmart grocery. You're all in for $40.61. Food cost is $30.21 plus $9.95 for delivery. And if you sign up for Walmart Plus, which is $98 a year, you can get free delivery. At Amazon Fresh, all in for $40.59. That's with free delivery through Amazon Prime. If you're not a member, there's a 30-day free trial. At Peapod from Stop and Shop, all in cost $63.10. It's about $53 for food, $10 for delivery. Higher than the others because their store brand products like turkeys are more expensive. And at Fresh Direct, you're all in for $96.23. Their turkey is fresh, not frozen. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
The federal government has recognized President-elect Joe Biden as the apparent winner of the November 3rd election, formally starting the transition of power. But President Trump still refuses to concede and vowed to continue to fight in court after General Services Administrator Emily Murphy gave the green light yesterday for Biden to coordinate with federal agencies ahead of his January 20th inauguration. Murphy acted after Michigan certified Biden's victory.
Number two.
President Trump's campaign is taking its fight to block Pennsylvania from certifying its election results to a federal appeals court. The long-shot legal motion before the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit came 2 days after a federal judge issued a scathing ruling that dismissed the campaign's effort to block the state from certifying its results, which show that Biden won the state.
Number three.
President-elect Joe Biden is set to formally introduce his national security team to the nation, building out a group of Obama administration alumni that signals his shift away from the Trump administration's America First policies and a return to U.S. engagement on the global stage. The picks for national security and foreign policy posts include former Secretary of State John Kerry to take the lead on combating climate change. Also, Biden is expected to choose Janet Yellen as the first woman to become Treasury Secretary. She was nominated by President Obama to lead the Federal Reserve and serve from 2014 to 2018. Hospitalizations from COVID-19 have set a record for the 13th day in a row, as Sunday's tally of new infections hit more than 142,700. Officials, including New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, are sounding the alarm about holiday gatherings.
You put that rate of increase, together with an additional increase from the high level of social activity, that is a dangerous situation.
The U.S. reported 921 deaths on Sunday. Movie buffs are going to love this. The Academy Museum of Motion Pictures in Los Angeles has installed in its permanent collection Bruce, the 25-foot, 1,208-pound shark model from the Oscar-winning film Jaws. The giant model hangs from the third floor above escalators where guests can view it through the window before entering and from several points within the museum. Other props will include Dorothy's ruby slippers from The Wizard of Oz and 10,000 other production drawings, costumes, and props. The museum slated to open at the end of April.
Ever since that shark model debuted in the movie, we never swam in the ocean the same way again, did
That's
we?
That's true.
Can't see my toes. I'm out of here. Thanks, Jen. Thanks for being with us. How about this for generosity? The owner of a jazz and blues club in Ohio said a customer who came in just before the business closed its doors due to the COVID-19 ordered a single beer and left a $3,000 tip. Brendan Ring, owner of Nighttown in Cleveland Heights, said a customer came in during brunch on Sunday, the last day before the business was due to close for a second time amid the pandemic, and ordered a single Stella Artois beer. The man handed his bill to Mr. Ring and told the owner to split the tip among the waitstaff. Mr. Ring said he initially was shocked to see the man had written in a $300 tip for a $7 bar tab, but he put his glasses on and realized the tip was actually $3,000. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, GEICO makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. geico.com. Easy.